Good afternoon, and welcome to week 14, what I expect to be the concluding session of our study of Megillat Rut. This is being recorded, unfortunately, because I was not able to keep our usual time of Tuesday afternoon, which means that, well, for all those who keep emailing me, asking me, hey, would you have everybody hold their questions to the end, you now get your wish. Because this is just going to be me monologuing. Definitely not my wish. Hopefully you have the source sheet. I kept the sources in Hebrew largely because since I'm on the road, I did not have a lot of time, but I do plan to read them aloud and explain them, and at least an advantage of the recording is that you're able to pause it and possibly rewind as needed. Okay, so we are up to Perek Dalet, Chapter 4, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Sentence 11. As we've done throughout this series, I'm not going to be seeing every point. There are an awful lot of things that we could spend more time on that we're not. But in the first part of the chapter, we discussed the situation with the fields and with marrying Rut, the question of why getting the field requires marrying Rut. Is that actually a requirement at all, or is that something that is a quest? Is it the way that Yibum is working here as a means of assisting Rut in addition to keeping the name of the family associated with the land? We asked the question of how Naomi and Rut came to possess the land at all. I'm not going through that whole conversation again. And we asked why the would-be redeemer was named Ploni Almoni. And we offered the out-there suggestion found in a medrash that it's actually his name, as well as a range of other answers. But really, the answer that almost everyone settles on here is that he is not to be named. He is anonymous because he refuses to redeem. He refuses to assist in the name of the family. And more, I suggested that in his refusal to assist, he actually positions himself against the message of the entire book. He is against the whole happy ending, right? Rut being able to have a family, Naomi being taken care of, the restoration of the name of Mahlon. And also he's against the messages we identified at the start of the book. The validation of the lineage of David HaMelech, of King David, literally, as he refuses to participate in that lineage. Obviously not knowing it would have led to King David, but nonetheless, he refuses to participate in that line. And also, we said that King David is validated as king because he comes from people who practice regal chesed, generosity, which Ploni Almoni will not do. We also had the theme of the book that God rewards chesed and God rewards loyalty. And that chesed and that loyalty of Naomi and Ruth is not going to be rewarded if Ploni Almoni has his way. And finally, the theme of loyalty and betrayal. Well, he's on the betrayal side of things. So he doesn't fit the theme of the book. So why in the world should he be named here? Okay, that was all what we discussed last time. So we continue here. And once again, I'm grateful to Dana and Ilan Rubinstein for dedicating the series. We're looking now at Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Alef, Chapter 4, Sentence 11, and the blessing that the people at the gate give to Boaz. Let's read the sentences themselves, please. Sentences 11 and 12, Pasukim Yud Alef and Yud Beis. Vayomru chal ha'am asher bashar v'hazakenim edim. Right before this in Sentence 10, Boaz asked the people at the gate to be witnesses, edim atem hayom. So they respond, edim, we are witnesses. That one word response of we are witnesses is something we've seen elsewhere. Those who are learning Shmuel with me will recall that we saw it in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Bet. There was aid, and there was some question as who was saying aid, but it's a declaration of being witnesses. So they, the people at the gate and the elders at the gate say, Edim, we are witnesses. But then they continue with what sounds like a beautiful bracha, a beautiful blessing. Yitain Hashem es ha'isha haba'al beisecha kirachel uchle'a. The woman who is entering your home should be like Rachel and Leah. Not should be like. God should make her like Rachel and Leah. Asher banu shtehem es beis Yisrael, the two of them built up the house of Israel. Va'aseh chayel be'efrasa, perform chayel in what sounds like Ephrat or Ephrata, maybe, Ukrashem beBeit Lachem, and call a name in Beit Lachem, but they're not done. V'hi v'ezcha k'vez Peretz. Your house should be like the house of Peretz, Asher Yalada Samar Lihuda, which Tamar produced for Yehuda, right? Peretz and Zerach. Min hazera Asher Yitain Hashem Lacha min ha'na'ara hazos. From the seed that Hashem will give you from this young woman. Interesting that before she's in Isha, now she's in Na'ara. I have nothing to say about it, just noticing it. So, it's a nice bracha for Boaz. How about a bracha for Ruth? When does Ruth get a bracha? Why is this a bracha just for, you know, for Boaz, about Boaz? I mean, it's about Ruth, that she should be like Rachel and Leah, but it doesn't actually address her. So, the reason why is because she's not there. I don't think she's there at this point. Meaning, we ended chapter 3 with Naomi asserting Boaz is going to take care of things on this day, and we began chapter 4 with Boaz going to the gate, but Naomi and Ruth are still at home. They're not at the gate. They're only going to show up, and really it's Ruth who's going to show up. In Pasuk Yigimel, in sentence 13, Boaz is going to marry Ruth. But at this stage, she's not there. That's my understanding. What we are seeing here is Boaz at the Beit Din. That's number one. Number two, just turn of phrase here, asei chayel, perform chayel. So perform chayel is a term that resonates with us from chapter 3, where we spent a lot of time talking about what chayel exactly means. Ibn Ezra says perform chayel means you didn't marry her for wealth, you married her instead, as we've said, in order to take care of her. So you should go on in that spirit to perform chayil in Ephrata. So that's the idea. But what exactly is Ephrata anyway? So we mentioned this briefly, I think, in the beginning of the Sefer. It's something also those who did Shmuel with me may recall from the very beginning of Sefer Shmuel. The word Ephrata is a little bit unclear as to whether it's actually referring to a place name. We do find Beit Lechem associated with that, or whether it means people who are miyuchas, people who have particularly fine and noble lineage. If you take a look in source number 1 on the sheet, you find the following comment from the Malbim. Ve'amar asei chayil be'efrata, and it said, and perform chayil in Ephrata, ki Beit Lechem hushem iro, Beit Lechem is the name of his city, ve'efrat hushem mishpachto, shayu miyuchasim, Ephrat is the name of his family, who had fine lineage. Not that his family is named Ephrat, the family is not named Ephrat, but it means Ephrat is a reference to his family, indicating that they were noble. Shata sechayo, that you should perform chayo, which Malbim explains to mean shezek koleo kol hashlemuyot. It includes all of the finest levels, all the milos, everything, that's chayo. Best of fill in the blank. Vitikare shem bebeit lechem, and the name shall be called in Beit Lechem means shalidei pirsum shimcha, that as your name is publicized, yisparsem shem iracha leshevach uletihila. The name of your city will also be publicized for praise, for glory, ki ish kamahu nolad ba, that it has such a citizen there in the town. So it will glorify the town. So Ephrata seems to be a reference to nobility, to a fine family. And the blessing here is he should go on to great things and a great name, and his family should have a good reputation and so on. Okay, a little bit interesting in the sense that Boaz seems to already be quite accomplished. You know, you don't go to the person who's already the shofet and top of the line and say you should go on to great things. Doesn't bother me so much. Just taking note. Okay, interesting note from Dr. Ziegler here, which I reproduced for you on the sheet in source number 2. There's a chiastic structure here. Chiastic structure, right, from the Greek chi, the Greek letter chi, C-H-I, refers in this case to something that is actually fairly clear once you look at the sheet. You have what is also known as an envelope structure. Really, I shouldn't blend in the whole chiastic envelope. It's a mistake for me to go that route. Forget, scratch those things. What I'm trying to show you here is simply the mirroring of beginning and end, and then internally, as you work your way inward, in the blessing that is given, so that the blessing begins, Yitein Hashem et ha'isha ha'ba'al beitecha. God should provide for the woman who enters your home. That's part A, if you will. Then part B, she should be like these two historic figures, Rachel and Leah, who built up the house of Israel. Okay, so our first part is what God should give. Our second part is a comparison to great historical figures. And then we get into what should actually result. Aseh chayel be'efrata, right, this is C, if you will. Aseh chayel be'efrata, perform chayel in Ephrata. And then we have a second piece of C, Ukrashem Beit Lechem, make a great reputation, a great name in Beit Lechem, and then we go back to B. Vihi Beischa Keves Peretz, your house should be like the house of Peretz, right? First B was like Rachel and Leah, the second B is to be like the house of Peretz, and then finally we go back to A, from the seed that Hashem will give this girl. In the beginning, A was Hashem should make the woman who enters your house. So what we're doing here, and you know, this is one of those times when I really, really don't like recording a class without being able to see people, so that we could actually have a conversation and I could see whether this is at all clear or whether I'm being less than clear. But what I'm trying to show you here, and what Dr. Ziegler is highlighting, is simply that the blessing builds. Starts out with Hashem giving, continues with historical comparison, and then moves into the innermost part of it, which is doing great things, the desired result of the union, before returning to historical comparison, and then returning to what Hashem should do. It's a nice poetic structure. That's what I'm trying to highlight here, what I think Dr. Ziegler is trying to highlight here. So what we've seen so far, recap, is a nice blessing addressed to Boaz about how they should go on to wonderful things from here and a great reputation, and this poetic structure that goes with it. However, we have some questions. You could ask lots of questions, but we're going to ask just a couple of questions. First of all, why are we specifying Rachel and Leah as the reference here? And why is Rachel named before Leah? I think about that. David, emerging from Ruth, right, is going to actually eclipse Yosef from Rachel, meaning the idea of Yosef as the leader basically disappears once Yehuda becomes the leader, right? And that comes up in many ways in our history, but most obviously, the northern kingdom versus the southern kingdom, right? Once, after the time of Shlomo HaMelech, his son Rehavam is going to be king and is going to lose the north. The north is going to secede, and the north, that is Yisrael, is known as Ephraim. The south, on the other hand, is known as Yehuda, and that is the part of Israel that actually remains, in the sense that they remain truer to the tradition. They have, on the whole, better kings than the north, and the north will end up being exiled by the Assyrians, while the south will remain. So Yehuda will remain, while this Ephraim, or Yisrael as it's also known, is going to disappear as the 10 lost tribes. When we think in terms of Mashiach, there's Mashiach ben David from Yehuda, and there's Mashiach ben Yosef from Yosef and from Rachel. Leah is going to eclipse Rachel via David, the son who is born as a result of this marriage. So, given that, really, you know, this is Beit Lechem Yehuda, which is from Leah, first of all. And second, everything about this marriage is going to perpetuate the dominance of Leah's family over Rachel's. Why are you mentioning Rachel before you mention Leah? That's one question. Question number two, why do we single out the house of Peretz? Now, you could just say, because that's where they're from. Boaz is a descendant of Peretz, and that's fine. That's legit. But I think there are other things that we could say here. So I'd like to suggest two approaches to this blessing that the people at the gate give. First approach is, this is a generic blessing that is recited in cases of Geula or Yibum, cases in which husband passed away without children, wife is now marrying somebody else within the family, this is the blessing that is designated for such cases. And that makes sense if the focus of the blessing is the house of Peretz. Right? Professor Meltzer in the Dot Mikra actually suggests this possibility. It makes a lot of sense. Meaning, we invoke Rachel and Leah in general. You should have a home like theirs. And within this view, I have no idea why Rachel should come before Leah, but we're going to come back to that. But we invoke the house of Peretz because they also, Peretz came from Geula, from Yehuda's Geula of Tamar. So just like Yehuda does this for Tamar, so too Boaz, you are doing this now on behalf of Ruth. That will also fit an added note from the Malbim. The Malbim breaks down this bracha into three parts, and right now we're looking at his third part. It's in source number 3. He says, you find here, bracha lahabanim shetolid. You have a blessing for the descendants that Ruth is going to produce. Shagam shehim b'nei yivama. Even though they are the children of a yivama, meaning this, odd marriage situation through in-laws, v'karu al shem hamet, and therefore they're going to be identified as the children of the deceased, of Machlon, b'chol zeh, halo gam beit peretz, sheyelda tamar ha'yagamkin binyan ha'yibum, v'yatzam yimena peretz. After all, don't worry about that, Peretz also came via Yibum, right, to replace the deceased heir and Onan, and yet we associate him with Yehuda, and all the glory goes to Yehuda's house. So in other words, what they're saying is, these children are going to emerge from the Yibum. You shouldn't feel bad about that. You should be like the house of Peretz. Peretz also came through Yibum, and yet the name, the good name, accrued to the house of Yehuda as well. So should be the house that will be solidified from the seed that God is going to give you from this girl, from this woman. So in other words, the statement is, the name remains your name, even though, yes, it's really in the name of the deceased. These children will still go on to greatness, and the greatness will be for your family as a whole. Now, the truth of the matter is that, it's just, worth noting, even by this time, the house of Peretz is already great. Don't think the house of Peretz only becomes great because of David. Peretz, among his descendants, counts Aminadav and Aminadav's son Nachshon. And I brought you a medrash from Rut Zuta on this point. It's also worth seeing the Gemara in Zvachim. I brought this for you in source number 4. V'hi beizcha kebeiz Peretz. Your house should be like the house of Peretz. Lo nemru dvarim halalu ela keneged Elisheva bas Aminadav. This was said specifically for Elisheva, daughter of Aminadav. What do you mean? Elisheva, daughter of Aminadav, marries Aharon. Sherasa arba smachos biyom echad. She saw 4 celebrations in one day. Bala ubaneha kohanim gedolim. Her husband Aharon, her son Elazar, would both become kohanim gedolim. At first, Elazar is a sgan. He's the deputy, if you will. Yevama melech. Her brother, the way that it's listed here is her Yavam is king. Presumably that's it's a brother-in-law. Is a reference to Moshe. V'achi ha-Nasi, and her brother, Nachshon, is the Nasi of Yehuda. If you were to look in the Gemara in Zvachim Kuf Beis, they add also that her grandson, Pinchas, is the Kohen who leads the nation to war, the Kohen Mashuach Melchama. But the point is, there's greatness in the house of Peretz, even before you get to David HaMelech. That's the point. So the house of Peretz is a great house, and the message here is the house of Peretz came from catastrophe and disaster and was supposed to be really in the name of Aaron Onan. And yet there was greatness that came from it for the entire family, the house of Yehuda. Look at what Elisheva, the descendant, got from it. There's greatness here despite where things began. So one way to look at it is, any time that they had Geula,
this blessing was offered to say, look, we have a model for Geula that works out really, really well. That's one. Second approach. This is a bracha that is specific to the case of Boaz and Ruth. And this makes sense if we emphasize the Rachel and Leah part as validation of Ruth. Meaning, Rachel and Leah both come from Lavan. Right? Not a great starting point. If you take a look, please, at source number 5, Malbim stresses this. This is Malbim's first part of the bracha. He says this is also a bracha for Ruth. Shagam shehi bat akum, even though she is a descendant of idolaters, mitzad shaba abeischa bayis tzadik kamocha tiyabetzid kasa. She's coming into the house of a great tzadik. She will remain in her righteousness. Kirachel uchleyah shahayu gam kein benos lavan ha'arami. Just like Rachel and Leah, who are daughters of Lavan, Vayedeshin is Davgu Yaakov, but they married Yaakov, and Banushtehem as Beis Yisrael, they built up the house of Israel. So their righteousness, combined with the righteousness of the man they marry, ends up leading to the building up the house of Israel. Kein Yibanem Imena Bayis Ne'eman. Shehi Beis, yeah, that's a typo in the Malbim. She Beis Malchus, Shebazet Taloy Atzlachas Kol Beis Yisrael. So she is going to build up a wonderful, faithful, enduring house. It will be the house of monarchy. The success of all Israel is going to be linked to it. So that's how Malbim reads this. So it's specifically about Ruth because she's coming into this from the outside. Even stronger is the way that the Chidah, Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulai, put it in source number 6 in his Chomat Anach commentary to Ruth. I don't quote the Chomat Anach much. There's a lot of mysticism that goes on. It's a whole other layer to the text that we really couldn't get to this year. But he says here, Pirshu Zal, he says, our sages explained, Dekivnu Lomar Ha'isha Haba'a Emesh El Beitecha Levarer imhi muteres lavo bakahal. When the text says the woman who is coming to your house, it means the woman who came to your house yesterday, last night. It means Ruth when she came to the granary. To clarify whether she is permitted to marry into the Jewish people. Veruach Hashem diber bamba zekeinim, and Hashem inspires the zekeinim, the elders, to say, Yitain Hashem et ha'isha kerachel uchaleah. Hashem should make them like her root, like Rachel and Leah. Diaisa b'chinas Rachel v'Leah, she has an aspect of Rachel and Leah. And what I'm seeing here in the Chidah is that we're validating her yichus. And we're saying that Ruth, despite the questions about her lineage, is to be viewed like Rachel and Leah. So first of all, we have the Malbim saying, you know, coming from a terrible place, you can still become great. Now we add in the piece about validating her lineage despite being a Moavit. And even stronger, we get this great medrash in Rut Rabbah. It's building off of a pasuk in Tehillim. Rigzu ve'al techetau, imru bilavavchem al mishkavchem ve'domu sela. Is the pasuk. It's in the 4th chapter of Psalms. If you want to pause your recording and go look up the pasuk, it may be useful. Where he says, Rigzu, you should tremble, ve'al techetau, and do not in. So, Amar David lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Medrash. David said in front of God, Ad emas ayhem mitragzim alai. How long are they going to be mitragez against me? Now, rogez can also mean anger. Mitragzim, getting angry at me, perhaps causing me to get angry, but I don't think so. But they're churning against me. Va'omrim, and they say about me, David says, Lo psul mishpacha hu, isn't he from a disqualified lineage? V'lome Rut hamoaviyahu, isn't he from Ruth? And so the pasuk continues, Imru bilavavchem al mishkavchem. Literally, say in your hearts, upon your beds, he says, about your beds. Meaning, af atem lome iser shteyachayos atem. David responds and says, you know, your lineage ain't so great either. He says to those who are challenging his lineage, you bothering me that I come from Ruth? You guys come from Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah are two sisters. They married Yaakov. Re'u ma'ikarchem. See where you came from. V'domu selah. And the pasuk ends, be silent. So David says, instead of looking at my ancestress Ruth, you should look at Rachel and Leah. That's his criticism and his response. So in other words, when we quote, may Hashem make you like Rachel and Leah here, the Medrash is saying that we're saying, you know, Rachel and Leah also had a lineage issue, so to speak, in terms of their marriage. A man is not supposed to marry two sisters. That can happen if the first one dies and then he marries the second one, but not to marry two sisters simultaneously. How indeed did Yaakov do that is a great discussion with many different commentators weighing in. But the point here is we mention Rachel and Leah and their marriage in order to say Ruth is not the first one to have a marriage where there's a question about lineage. And then actually the Medrash concludes by saying, and by the way, Tamar, on the other hand, who Yehuda, my ancestor, married, Tamar came from great lineage. She was a daughter of Shem, son of Noach. That's fantastic. How you know Tamar came from Shem is a whole other discussion, not for right now. So he says, you have your lineage, I have my lineage. Okay? I've got Tamar from Shem ben Noach. You guys have an issue. So that's basically the read of the Medrash here. And again, coming back to this, what we're trying to say is they invoke Rachel and Leah as a validation of Ruth. That's what we're doing. We're validating her saying Rachel and Leah also came from a bad stock. They turned out wonderful, number one. Number two, we're validating her lineage. She is to be viewed like Rachel and Leah. That was the Chida. And then finally, a different twist from the Medrash in Rut Rabbah, Rachel and Leah also had a lineage problem as two sisters marrying one man. Stop bothering me about my lineage. Dr. Ziegler adds an interesting additional note. I think it's a nice idea, in which she notes that the Pasuk says, Asher banu shtehen. The two of them built up the house of Israel. So she suggests that that's a plea for unity. Because, as I mentioned before, from this marriage is going to come David, who is going to lead Yehuda, and he's going to lead all Israel, but Yehuda is going to be the most loyal to him. And what we're doing here is trying to unite Yehuda and Yisrael. So I think that's a nice note as well. All right. So either you emphasize the Beit Peretz part and say this was a blessing that went for Geulah in general, perhaps, or we can emphasize the Rachel and Leah part as particularly appropriate for the case of Boaz and Ruth. Okay, we still haven't answered the question, though, of why you put Rachel before Leah. So Ibn Ezra says, read the story, right? Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel first, so therefore she gets listed first. Medrash in Rut Rabbah goes further with it, though. If you take a look at source number 8, Amar Rabbi Brechya, Rov Misubin Mishal Leah Hayu. Misubin here, there are different views in the commentators, but the way I understand it is most of the people who were reclining there at the gate, meaning Boaz's elders in the town of Beit Lechem Yehuda, were actually from Leah. Lefichach hu ose Rachel, akara, meaning ikar. Therefore, he makes Rachel the ikar, the main thing. In other words, he's making a point, Rachel is the essence. And it's certainly true that to Yaakov, Rachel is the essence. I bring you one startling example. If you take a look at source number 9, this is when Yehuda is speaking to Yosef. Yehuda, from Leah, is speaking to Yosef, the viceroy in Egypt, not knowing who he is, and talking about how his father did not want to send down Binyamin. And he quotes his father Yaakov, Vayomer avdecha avi eleinu, your servant, my father, said to us, Atem yidatem, you know, kishnayim yoladali ishti, that my wife gave birth to two sons. And one of them disappeared, and now you're going to take the other one, and so on. But ishti, Yaakov, as Yehuda is quoting him, Yaakov calls Rachel my wife. He has more than one wife. But he calls Rachel my wife. Comments Ramban on that pasuk that I brought you in 9. I didn't bring you the Ramban. But he says, yeah, because that's the way that Yaakov views her. Rachel is the main wife. It's really very, very strong. But I think there's more to be said here based on another piece in the Medrash and Rabbah from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. If you continue to source number 10, you see it there. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, Rachel dealt with people saying things against her. The Tani Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Lafisha Namru Devarim Keneged Rachel. Things were said against Rachel. Lafichach Nikru Yisrael Al Shema, and therefore Israel is known under her name. So that we say Rachel cries for her descendants in the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Velosof Davar Al Shema El Al Shem Bana, but not only that, the Jews themselves are identified based on the name of her son. They're called She'erit Yosef, the remnant of Yosef. And not only that, but we say about the northern kingdom, Havein Yakir Li Ephraim, they are called Ephraim. And then the Medrash concludes with a note that we've already seen about the word Ephrata, that Kol Gadol Shebi Yisrael, all the great ones in Israel, are called Al Shem Ephraim. David ben Ish Ephrati, Yeravim ben Nevat Ephrati, Machlon Bekilion Ephratim, the word Ephrati being a reference to nobility and coming from Ephraim, who is the grandson of Rachel. Now, there's more about what people said about Rachel. People spoke against Rachel when she was in Akara, when she couldn't have children. There's a lot more to be said about that whole piece. I'm not going there right now. But what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says is we put Rachel first. All Israel is identified as descendants of Rachel. But here I want to throw in an added note, which the Medrash does not say, at least explicitly. And that is that it may connect to Rut, because someone spoke against Rut as well. Ploni Almoni. He was very happy to buy the field we saw last week. When it came to marrying Rut, he said, oh, that I can't do. That would destroy my nach, destroy my portion. As we said last week, right? I think we were quoting, I think it was Dr. Ziegler who emphasized this. For him to say that is devastating. Out there in the public space, you have this gentleman who has the opportunity to redeem, who says, I'll take the land, absolutely, marry her. Oh, no, I won't do that. Whether he's saying it because she's from Moab, whether he's saying it for any reason, that's devastating. So she also had people speak out against her, as Rachel did. So I wonder about that, whether Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is getting at that. He doesn't say it explicitly. But what happens here is really the turnaround for Ruth, and a blessing that either, despite this being a marriage of Ge'ulah, it should lead to greatness for the whole family, or alternatively, despite the questions and challenges and clouds that might be surrounding Ruth the Moabite, it's a blessing that everything should work out wonderfully. Last note on this bracha, Professor Meltzer, in his summary on this section in Dat Mikra, notes that this whole thing is also a turnaround for Naomi, because it's taking place at the Sha'ar, at the gate of the city, and now it's this big bracha about how they, you know, things should be wonderful for the family coming from the people at the Sha'ar. In the first chapter, everyone at the Sha'ar was, whoa, look what happened to her. And now it's a bracha for the family's growth and redemption, so that's very nice. Okay. So after this, Boaz marries Ruth formally, right, in sentence 13. And the text explicitly gives this the divine blessing, as it says in sentence 13, Vayitain Hashem la Hayrayon. God gave her conception, Vateled Bain, and she produced a son. And then we get sentences 14 and 15. Sentences 14 and 15, the women give a bracha for Naomi. No one's giving Ruth a bracha. That's its own discussion, I think, but I think there's what to be said. But let's take a look at the bracha here. Vatomarna hanashim el Naomi. The women said to Naomi, Baruch Hashem ashalo hishbis lach goel hayom. God is blessed. He did not eliminate for you a goel, a redeemer today. I want to come back to that phrase. V'yikarei shemo b'Yisrael. Over and over again, we've emphasized shame, the name, the enduring name. His name should be called in Israel. He should become known for his greatness. Although Dr. Ziegler says just having his name known is important here. The family's name was nearly lost, and now it will be maintained. So, look, you now have a redeemer. And v'hayalacha l'meshiv nefesh, he should be a restorer of life. I want to come back to that phrase. ulchalkele sevasech, to support your old age. Kichalasech asher ahevasech yiladatu, because your daughter-in-law, who loved you, produced him. Say the commentators, Ruth loved you, so rest assured her son will take care of you. Asher hi tovalach mishiv abanim, she's better for you than seven sons. What is the seven son reference here? So you could just say, it's a big number. If you think back to the Song of Chana, you have the, an association there, Akara Yelda Shiva. But I did note the Medrash, which I brought for you on the sheet in source number 11, which says if you count the generations, after Yehuda, starting with Peretz down to Boaz, you have seven sons. So Ruth is better for you than these seven sons we're going to enumerate at the end of the book. So what is this Lo Hishbit Lach Goel? He did not eliminate for you a redeemer, a meshiv nefesh. What is that about? So the simple read, as in Professor Meltzer in the Dan Mikra, is the child will be the Goel. The child is going to be your redeemer. He's going to take care of you, meshiv nefesh, restoring you emotionally after tragedy. That's the simple and straightforward read. Dat Mikra also brings another simple read, which is that the Redeemer is Boaz, right? Boaz has now performed a complete redemption by taking care of you and producing a child. I think it's hard to read it that way, because Boaz is really presented as a Redeemer of Ruth, or of Mahlon's name, not really of Naomi. Nonetheless, it's a possibility. The Malbim goes mystical. You remember when we talked about, at the beginning of chapter 3, the concept of Yibum and Ge'ulah, we suggested that there is this school of thought that it's meant to be a reincarnation of the man who passed away without having children. So Malbim goes full bore into this idea. The child is the Goel, the Redeemer, and Meshiv Nefesh, restorer of the soul of Machlon. Take a look at source number 12. V'hayalacha l'meshiv nefesh, he is a restorer of the soul. Rotz lomar shehu heshiv es nefesh machlon shenis el ha'olam hazeh. He brought the life of Machlon back to this world. V'nafsho hu nefesh machlon bincha. His soul is the soul of your son Machlon, says the Malbim. He's a meshiv nefesh, and also, if you look into sentence 17, the women are going to say, "Yulad bein leNaomi," a son is born to Naomi. So he says that doesn't just mean like, oh, Naomi is going to raise him, or no, a son is born to Naomi. Her son is reborn. Machlon is reborn. Indeed, he actually notes. Take a look; it's worth jumping ahead for a second. Look at sentence 17. This is Malbim's ear. Vatikrena lo ashkenos shame. The neighbors called him a name, Lemor, saying, Yulad bein leNaomi. A son is born to Naomi. Vatikrena shemo Oved, and they called his name Oved. So how many times are they calling him a name? First they call him a name, a son is born to Naomi. Then they call him a name Oved. We're going to come back to the Oved piece of it. But says Malbim, this is the first naming. The first naming is, he is Naomi's son, he is Machlon. Now, we don't actually name him Machlon, as we've discussed, but nonetheless, he is a new son for Naomi. So we have three different types of redeemer here. Either it's the child who's going to take care of you, right? Take care of you, Naomi. Or alternatively, it's Boaz as the redeemer who has taken care of you, Naomi. But again, that's hard because that's not really Boaz's role. Or it's the child, as we said before, but the child specifically as Machlon reborn. I also have to wonder here. We have a concept of somebody prophesying and not knowing what they're prophesying. Nibu velo yadu ma nibu. They prophesied without knowing what they were prophesying. You're saying here that he's a goel. Well, doesn't that not call to mind David and Mashiach as a redeemer? Granted that commentators do not suggest it. But take a look at source number 13, the Medrash in Rut Rabbah, which says, Rav Huna says, Mibirkotehen shel nashim, because of the bracha of the women saying that God has not eliminated from you a redeemer, lo nitkaka'a beitzato shel David bimei Atalia. Therefore, in the days of Atalia, a woman who, as a member of the royal family, long story, tried to eliminate all of the descendants of the house of David, but was unsuccessful. One survived. You know why one survived? Because of the bracha. God will not eliminate from you a redeemer. So there will always be a member of the house of David. Now, of course, Hashem also promised that the house of David will be taken care of. But the women's bracha came first. Came before Hashem's bracha to David. Maybe it motivated it. I don't know. But in any case, just noting that as a possibility. Last point. Naming Oved, it would be extremely unusual in Tanakh for the neighbors to give a name. I don't even know of a precedent for the neighbors to give a name. If someone wants to email me and correct me on that. But commentators tend to take it not so much as an actual formal naming, even though his name is Oved and is recorded that way in the lineage, but this is an expression of people's reaction to him, perhaps playing off of his name. Either it is a straight reaction to what Naomi is doing, and Professor Meltzer brings that in the Dot Mikra. Naomi is taking care of him. She works hard for him. So he shall be named Oved, which is one who works or one who serves. That's one take. Or the more common view, it's a tefillah. It is a prayer that he should grow up to be an Oved Hashem, a servant of God. If you take a look at Ibn Ezra, which I brought you here in source number 14, he says, "V'yitachein." It could be shenikra oved, that he was called oved, shaholido zaken velo lakach haisha kiim bavur kavod Hashem, because this old man produced him. He didn't get married for any purpose other than the honor of God. V'gam ha'em azvadata ve'aretz molarata v'chasta b'tzel kenaf Hashem, and his mother left her religion, left her land, and came to be beneath Hashem's wings, so to speak. Alkein yihya haben oved Hashem. Therefore, the son should be a servant of God. Kirubei habanim domim la'avu le'em kihem hasharashim. Because most sons resemble the parents are the roots. So Ibn Ezra says they're davening and saying he should be an oved Hashem like his two wonderful parents. Now, anytime I quote you a source that says, "See that? Children become like their parents," I automatically have to follow it up with a counter source. Rav Moshe Alshich, who knew about this in terms of his own family experience, perhaps, this his own story. But if you take a look at source number 15, this is a comment that he makes in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel when we talk about how, on the one hand, Eli has two sons, Hophni and Pinchas, and they go horribly wrong. What exactly they did wrong, we're not discussing right now. But on the other hand, Shmuel grows up away from his parents, and he grows up to be wonderful. So take a look at the Alshich, and because I've used it in other source sheets, I didn't have to do a translation, so I put my translation from the other source sheets here. You can see it there. I'll read my English out loud. "Much is done by merit, and much is done by prayer," meaning in terms of how things turn out in life. This is the opposite of people's statement that education and the youth's training in Torah and mitzvos and the path of God depend on the father. The one who grows up with his father will grow up with a good reputation, for his father teaches him to be good, as opposed to one who lacks a father or is distant from him. Right? He says people have this notion that somehow he's crediting the father as opposed to the mother, which is also interesting. But he says, people have this notion that the father is the one who will make sure that the kid grows up to be good. Just train him hard in Torah and mitzvos and be around and your kid will turn out to be fine. And he says, this is incorrect. We see many people whose father and mother left them and they're complete chachamim. They're great sages. And many who grew up with their fathers and did not learn from their good deeds. And go look at Hophni and Pinchas versus Shmuel. So the Alshich says not so fast. I just bring that because Ibn Ezra makes this comment that, you know, good parents lead to good kids. That's a really nice idea. Would that it always worked out the way people plan. But the point here is, in terms of Oved, that either it is a reaction to Naomi working for him, taking care of him, therefore we say, oh, look, Oved, that's one approach. Or Ibn Ezra and many others are similar. It's a tefillah. It's a prayer that he should be an Oved Hashem, that he should be a servant of God. I add one more source here, just a closing note here. When we say Yulad Bein LeNaomi, that a son is born to Naomi, so we already saw Malbim's idea that it's because the child born from this is like is Machlon returned to this world. But take a look at source number 16. This is a classic, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. They're talking about how if you raise an orphan, it's as though you birthed the child. So they bring various sources for it, and here Rabbi Chanina quotes our pasuk that the women named him and said, "Yulad bein leNaomi, a son is born to Naomi." So the Gemara asks, "V'chi Naomi yolda? Did Naomi birth him? V'hala Rut yolda? Rut was the one who gave birth to him." Ella Ruth Yalda v'Naomi Gidla. Yeah, Ruth gave birth to him. Naomi raised him. Lefichach Nikra al Shema. And therefore, he is called a son being born to Naomi because of her chesed. So I thought that was a nice note in terms of the chesed theme in the Sefer. Of course, the big point, which I have not addressed at all, is, yeah, but where is Ruth? What does this mean? Naomi raised him. Was Ruth out gleaning? I mean, she presumably isn't gleaning anymore. We don't know. Exit stage left. The book is really happy to talk about how Naomi has been rewarded and taken care of and so on, and doesn't give us, you know, what happens to Ruth afterwards. And I don't have an answer for you. I'm leaving that as an open question. I don't really follow that, and I haven't seen anyone who really gave it something that I could take away from, you know, from as like, oh, that's it. On the other hand, my learning of this is hardly exhaustive. Okay, I also brought you review questions on the sheet, so you should feel free to take a look at those. These are review questions for chapter 4 we've had for the other chapters earlier. And thank you very much. And God willing, on July 6th, we will have 1 week in which we will talk about Megillat Eicha. Be well.